always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside, joined on this nervous, we'll call it a nervy Thursday evening by Edwin Garcia of Silver Screen and Roll. Edwin, how you holding up, bud?
You know, I'm hanging in there. Sun still rose today, believe it or not. And I'm trying to remind people that. And as the Hawks have showed us, it's just basketball. You know, it's just basketball.
I thought it was really cool that the Hawks just like started their vacation for everybody to watch. It was just nuts. They were just like, they hit the all-inclusive bar. They were just, you know, living it up at the at halftime of their own game. It was crazy. Today on the show, the reason that we are a little bit nervy and the reason I'm like hesitant to even like get this conversation started, and I'm kind of filibustering and I can feel my desire to continue filibustering, is because the Lakers feel like they're on the verge of some pretty bad history. So we're going to talk about wrong in game five. We're going to talk about how those things that went wrong can be avoided here as they prepare for game six in Houston. We're going to talk about our levels of you know, where we sit on the panic meter and how nervous we actually should be given the context of everything going on here. And then we'll just kind of discuss over the course of this thing how we see this playing out and why. So should be a fun, nervy conversation that Edwin and I are about to have. A reminder, please hit that like button. Please hit that share button. Please hit that subscribe button. Turn on notifications for the show. Turn on notifications for YouTube so you get the notifications for the show. And then if you guys are listening to the podcast in the morning via podcast form, please hit subscribe wherever it is that you get your podcast, preferably on Odyssey, but I truly do not care where you get them. A reminder also that this show is brought to you in video form by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and you can get $50 worth of free Prize Picks lineups when you sign up and play a $5 lineup of your own. All right, so we'll go start this thing off. Also, a quick heads up too. I feel like my feed here is kind of jumpy, kind of going in and out. We had a crazy storm that ripped through the city that I live in, and the internet basically ever since has been super dodgy. I've turned off the TV that sits over there. I've turned off TweetDeck. I've turned off Slack. Everything. I am just focused on Edwin. Edwin, I'm sorry. I apologize in advance. Normally I have other outlets for what's going on in my brain. But if this gets jumpy or if I drop out, that's why. It's because of the torrential downpour that we had yesterday and the one that we're preparing for tomorrow. All right. So Edwin, let's just rip the Band-Aid and let everybody bleed. According to Raj, where do you sit on the panic meter right now? Is this a Buzz Lightyear and Woody situation where, you know, Buzz says this is no time to panic and Woody replies this is the perfect time to panic? Yeah. Like, where do you sit on the panic meter as the Lakers get ready for tomorrow's game six?
We are right in between the moment when Buzz says that and Woody responds. That's exactly where we sit, because we're almost there. We're almost there.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's 3-2. And hey, if you win game six, we'll just be like, that got a little too dicey for what I liked. If they lose game six, then we are at the perfect time to panic. There is no more. We are now at a 50-50 game. It's a game seven. You know how that's going to be. You start looking at that 100, the graphic's going to come up. 160 teams have finished this job, you know, and that's when it is. But we are right in between where it's more than fair to ask the question, and it's okay to not be panicking yet. But we're only one. By this time tomorrow, we're going to know, you know, if someone's going to say it because, you know, the Rockets are up 12 and it's, you know, midway through the second quarter. And we're like, oh, no, this is rough. I'll tell you one thing. I know where I don't want to be Sunday, and that's Crypto.com Arena. That's the last place I want to be on Sunday. If we're there, I'm not going to be feeling good, and I'm not going to be happy about the day that I am having. That's for sure.
It just dawned on me that, like, that is Braj's favorite place in the world, and he would totally rather not be there. Like, no. He does not at all want to be there on Sunday. That is amazing. Yeah, I think here's why I am concerned. It's not because I think the Rockets have figured anything out about the Lakers. It's not because I think that, like, Austin Reeves came back, that, like, the athleticism deficit just crept a little too far in the wrong direction. It's not because of, you know, the factors that most people would kind of point to. It's because the Lakers have back-to-back playoff games with one day of rest in between. And when you're the older team and one of those days features travel, by the way, like you got to go to two different time zones twice in 36 hours or whatever it is, really three times in 36 hours. That's where, you know, that's why I'm sitting here today saying, shit, history could actually happen here.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Now, I'll also say this, though. There's plenty of reasons to believe that the Lakers can just kind of figure this out. And one thing that kind of struck me both watching it live and then during my rewatch was, I don't understand why LeBron spent so much time on the perimeter in that game. And you would think that when you get Austin Reeves back, that would make it that much easier for LeBron to, you know, take up a different spot on the court. So it was kind of an interesting, you know, approach to the game offensively. What have you seen? What did you see from, like, what went wrong aside from missing shots, which we will all grant that the Lakers missed a lot of makeable shots.
Sure.
Did you see anything process wise that you would like to see tweaked?
The defense. I didn't like the doubling of Şengün. I felt, you know, Raj talked about this as well, and I felt like that was just a little bit too much. It's interesting seeing Redick's progression. When he first got the job, he was always adamant about, we don't double. I don't like to double. It gives the other team an advantage. We're switching everything. If you do your job, it's fine. And then he started doubling certain players like KD and Joker and saw them get frazzled. And he's like, hey, actually, the doubling kind of does work. And now I think we've gone too far the other way, where now it's become always double the star. And now since KD's gone, well, now that's Şengün. And seeing him getting doubled and just passing out of it and letting his guys knock down shots, I felt like I understand the idea of, hey, if that guy who's not a three-point shooter hits it, I'm okay with it. But there's a difference between, like, being okay with him taking the shot and giving him, like, 8 feet of space with no one around because you're so focused on doubling, and then he's hitting like practice shots. If you're going to give them those kind of shots, oh, they're going to make them because they're NBA players. You have to at least, you know, guard a little bit better. And I think if you just trust the guys and stay home, that would have been better. I think even switching things up, trying some zone, just mixing some things up, because they weren't exactly gangbusters either. They only scored 99 points, but they were finding success. Dorian Finney-Smith was hitting shots. I saw, you know, like a lot of just like offensive stuff where I'm like, we need to like kind of slow this down a little bit. And credit to the, you know, the Rockets, they did their job. But I think the defense was something, I think there's some things to clean up there. And I agree with you on LeBron. I think you want to put him more in the post. And again, two different strategies. Now, Ime went from like, I'm doubling LeBron, to actually prove to me you could score one-on-one. Like, and then I'll double. And that's meant more one-on-one play. LeBron has been able to take advantage. And the way they're guarding Luke Kennard is just he can't breathe. They're defending him like Steph on those screens. And that flare screen is not available. We're not letting you get the ball. We're going to end that's led to more turnovers and et cetera. So I think offensive execution is still required. I think the Lakers are still number one in turnovers, which is not what you want to be in the playoff series. And that hasn't been good. So I think those are a couple things besides a few rotation stuff. Hayes is another player who, man, he's been rough. Laravia played 9 minutes. There's been some questionable stuff up and down the roster, I think.
Yeah, let's start with the defense because on one hand, you say like defense, like they scored 99 points. You know, it'd be one thing if the Rockets scored 135 and the Lakers lost in a shootout.
Yep.
But where I will agree with you is that, like, in those moments where the Lakers needed to get a stop, I wasn't very confident, you know, it's kind of weird because, you know, I talked about this in yesterday's episode. Houston really tweaked their approach or really kind of turned their approach on its head by normally and for the vast majority of the season, they have been crashing the boards like gangbusters.
Yeah.
They'd send multiple, you know, they'd send people from both corners. They would have somebody down low, just kind of like taking up space and focus away from the defense so that those guys who were crashing from the corners would be that much more successful. But in this one, the Lakers limited the offensive rebounds. The Rockets basically decided, nope, we're going to just get everybody back. We're okay with the one possession, the one opportunity. And I think that approach from Houston really kind of made those 99 points kind of fool's goldish, right? Where if they do get a couple of extra, those extra boards and then miss some bunnies and stuff like that too. So the 99 points, it's easy to point to, but yeah, it especially watching in the rewatch today, it was driving me nuts. It was just like, why are you doubling Şengün 30 feet from the basket? Like what? Yeah. Like, you know, it's one thing. I've actually liked the way that the Lakers have doubled him, you know, when they have in this series so far, where basically if he's in the post and he turns to his left and he starts going to that right hand, they really sat on that right hand and forced him away from it. I'm fine with those kinds of doubles because the ball travels so little space that the defenders don't have to rotate that far. Yeah. But when you are asking the less athletic team to now cover cross-court skip passes because of the doubles that you're sending, that's where I think you're getting yourself into problems. And the other thing, too, is, you know, you mentioned how the Rockets, you know, they were so open that they were practice shots. This Rockets team gets to play super free. They don't have Kevin Durant anymore. If they lose, like worst case scenario is they lose this series and Ime Udoka gets fired, I don't think they would be all that about that. So it's like now that ball swings around and Jabari Smith and Tarzan and whoever, they're sitting there in the corner. They can shoot it super free and they had all the time in the world to shoot it. Those are things that the Lakers, I think, are going to have to take into account to a greater degree. The other thing too, like, I often say that, you know, the cliche is usually a stop isn't a stop until you get a rebound. But you also, like, the stop is kind of meaningless if you don't generate any kind of advantage out of that stop. And that was something that was driving me nuts, was like the Lakers were getting, like, they only gave up the 6 offensive rebounds. And yet they didn't get anything basically to you know, from those stops that they were actually generating. And it's really difficult to get back into a game or to flip the score when you're basically playing only in the half court on offense. So what do you think the Lakers can do here to get their transition offense back into becoming a bigger factor here?
Yeah, this kind of sounds mean to say, but I feel like your platform allows for this, so I'm going to go for it. The Lakers are winning the rebounding battle because the Rockets want them to. You know, like if the Rockets wanted to win, we saw that in the first couple of games. If the Rockets wanted to just say, hey, we're bigger, stronger, faster, we're going to annihilate you on the boards, they could do it. They're choosing not to because of what you said. What's LeBron number one in? Transition buckets. He wants to get out. He wants, despite his age, he wants to run less impact. Just be free, have the advantage, run. You can't spray and go like that because the Lakers can't really do that inbounding the ball necessarily. They do it off turnovers. They do it off of misses and that hit-ahead pass. They're taking that all away and say, hey, if we set our defense, we don't think you have the ball handlers to actually get into the actions you want to get into. So we're going to do that. So, hey, we're going to relinquish a couple boards. But so what? Like you said, okay, if I give you the ball and you can't score – okay, that's fine. We'll eventually outscore you, and that's how we're going to win the game. So I think it's a matter of having to find ways to turn the ball over. You have to find ways to get ahead, and that's going to be a struggle. I think Austin's going to help a lot with that because Austin wants to push the pace too, and Austin having the ball and starting the game, which I think he will start in game six, I think that's automatically going to give you – yeah, he's going to give you some more freedom, more mobility. He's going to push the pace. And then, like you said, I think getting LeBron just in motion. Also, like, he's getting the ball at the top of the key so much. I'd like to see him run some stampede cuts, get the ball downhill, use Ayton in those actions, and just get him in motion. Him pounding the ball and being up top and being asked to push the ball up and then set things up, it's just too slow and it's too much execution required. You need to get a little bit of havoc in there. And besides doing that off, you know, turnovers, of course, inbounding the ball and having Reeves kind of push the pace and then LeBron getting the ball as a secondary option, I think that's going to help a lot and free things up.
Yeah, the Rockets defense, once it is set, is just so daunting. You know, they are all crazy athletes. They are all 6'7", and then you have like Reed Shepard, but they're all like so you have Reed Shepard and Şengün over there, and then everybody else is this like 6'6" to 6'9", 6'10" super athlete who gets into passing lanes. And you know, when they're kind of given their assignments, and specifically as it pertains to Luke Kennard, everybody has basically gotten the assignment of like, we don't win if he goes off. Yeah. And one of the things that I was really kind of hoping for with Reeves coming back was that the Lakers could get back to running some sets for Kennard to, you know, all right, fine. You want to run, you want to stay attached to my hip. You want to focus as solely on me and shutting me down to the extent that you are. All right, fine. Let's do this thing then. Good luck running around four or five screens to keep up with me. Meanwhile, while I'm doing that, maybe Austin and LeBron are running an actual, you know, pick and roll on the strong side. And imagine. Like, I just thought that the Lakers offense, like it was funny because, you know, obviously like Krangis has been tracking organized offense to the extent that he has this year. Mm-hmm. And that term came up again in the chat last night while we were, you know, licking our wounds. And I don't think this is just a matter of like JJ isn't calling sets, the Lakers aren't doing this.
Yeah.
It wasn't so much that they were disorganized, it was more that they were like directionless. There was no purpose to what they were trying to do. What like they didn't understand which advantage to gain. And it was really kind of frustrating because at the beginning of the game, it looked like they did. Like they were basically running, they would bring Rui up to set a screen on Austin to force Reed to guard Austin. And then when Reed was guarding Austin, you would bring Ayton up so that the pick and roll would be Austin and Ayton against Reed Shepard and Alperen Şengün. And it's like, yes. Like, this is how you get you play those guys off of the court. Ime probably doesn't want to play those guys at the same time anyway. So if he's reminded rudely that that is not a great idea defensively, then eventually he might, you know, rethink it. And maybe you get a little bit less Reed Shepard. And no, like, you know, they did it a little bit in the first quarter. It looked like it was something that they could maybe hunt for the rest of the game. And it just like they went completely away from it. And in its place was like, let's target Reed Shepard with Rui Hachimura ISOs. And that feeds right into what Ime Udoka is doing. Like this is the sacrificial lamb defense where you basically put Reed on a guy he has no hope of guarding one-on-one. And that convinces a team to run ISOs for that player. But when you're running ISOs for Rui Hachimura, that takes the ball out of LeBron's hands. It takes the ball out of Austin Reeves' hands. It takes the ball out of the pick and rolls that they could run together or with Ayton. And those are the things that Ime really wants to avoid. So I thought that the Lakers, by trying, like by over-focusing on Reed Shepherd and specifically focusing on him in the least effective ways that they possibly can, they really kind of played into Houston's, you know, game plan. And if you basically, like, what Houston's gamble was, all right, we're going to get back on defense. We're going to take away their transition game. We're going to force them to execute in the half court. And then if you play into their game plan in the half court, now it's the worst of both worlds. So those are the things that, like, I am a little nervous. I'm not going to lie. Like, I'm certainly like not exactly looking ahead or looking forward to tomorrow's game. But I do think that there are some things process wise that Lakers fans can kind of latch onto and say they played the dumbest game that they could have possibly played yesterday. And it was still relatively close for most of it. And if you just play 25-30% smarter, not even like accounting for knocking down more shots, which you can't quite like count on the road, maybe sure, you can get some things going in that direction. So like sounds like you kind of share the same level of I dare to call it optimism, that like there are things that the Lakers could very clearly do better and smarter.
Yeah, I think there's also like too many stretches where the offense just kind of died. I think there's a stretch there, I think in the third quarter, where there's like 4 minutes where there was like no field goals from the Lakers. And it's like that kind of stuff was happening. But it's like, you know, we almost saw those graphics. You know, it's been 5 minutes since like the Lakers scored a field goal. And like you said, you got to be careful taking the bait that was set there for you. And the Lakers have been too much hunting Reed Shepherd. It worked a lot, especially early on, but it was also multiple players doing it. And it was just kind of more, that felt more in the flow of the game. And when you get just like tunnel vision like that, the problem when you're hunting a player like that is the only good option is you have to win that battle because you're spamming it. And when you're not winning it, now it's a net negative all over. You know, we don't live in the universe where they actually were moving the ball around and they found a corner three for Luke, or, you know, a dunk off for like Ayton because that ended up available because, you know, Austin drove and all different types of actions. Now there's only one possibility. Rui, one-on-one, beats him off the dribble, pulls up, or just, you know, backs him down, which is that really Rui's game? Like backing a small guy down like that and then putting him in the paint? Not necessarily.
Right,
it's his game to come off one or two dribbles, but usually that's after a couple of movements and then you just find them weak side and then he hits that like midi that he's really good at. It's more in the flow of the game and you're like, oh, that's a really good mismatch. We can go to it like when it's available and when it makes sense. He's not LeBron where you can just say, hey, like destroy this guy. This mismatch is here. He's not that kind of player. He's not an ISO player that way, you know, on the ball like that heavy. And I think that you just get the law of diminishing returns was kind of happening with that kind of setup. I think that was a big mistake. I'm hoping, I'm assuming they're going to kind of go away from that. They can clean it up. And like you said, for all the errors and the poor offense and the too many turnovers, it was a two-possession game with 2 minutes to go. And it could have went the other way. So
if now, unfortunately, you had the dumb play, the errors made it more than that later, like a couple plays later. But yeah, like that's the point, man. It's like
even that official call, if that call doesn't get overturned, right? That offensive foul thing, that would have been Lakers ball down five, and Easton would have been ejected from the game. Like these little things, again, every team can do this for every game, but except for the Hawks tonight. But other than that, you know, it's possible for one or two plays could have went the other way. And I think just like you said, starting us in the beginning, and now everyone, there is no one. I don't know what the Lakers are thinking. I don't like to do the psychological stuff. I don't know them to that level. But they know now that they are heading to the danger zone. It's 3-2 now. Everyone knows what's happening. It's 3-2. You got your guy back. Luka is nowhere near coming back for this series. Austin is back. This is a team. You got to win this game. You do not want to go to game 7. So I expect there to be the urgency and focus that kind of circumstance presents.
It's funny. I know you just said that you don't want to do the mental thing, but I'll do it for you.
Yeah, you can do it.
I don't have to interview him, so like, don't worry about it. But like, the thing here with the Lakers, and we've seen it from them all year, is the moment that they can take an opponent just slightly less seriously than maybe they should, the Lakers become the worst version of themselves. Mm-hmm. And the thing with the Lakers is, and this is something that we knew going into the season and was proven right over and over and over and over and over again, is that the Lakers, of all of like the decent to good teams, right, in the league, they have, I would argue, widest gap between their ceiling and their floor. And when they don't take somebody seriously and when they dip back into those bad habits, they are a bad basketball team. They aren't a mediocre team. They aren't mid. They aren't meh. They are bad. And I think, you know, like they are still talented enough to dig themselves out of some holes and give themselves some chances that they would maybe not otherwise, or most teams might not have a chance in. But when the Lakers dip into those bad habits, it is ugly. And, you know, it was funny. I thought, and I think the Lakers probably felt this way too, I thought that all the Lakers needed was like one big run in yesterday's game, like one big punch to the gut that the Rockets say, all right, we're done here. I don't have to answer questions about where Kevin Durant is anymore. I don't have to like listen to Ime Udoka call me a bitch anymore. Like, I can just go on vacation and we can all we can all move on. And it looked like in that first quarter, remember, the Lakers got up by like 8 to 10 points.
Yeah.
And there were like three possessions that two of them were wide open threes that they missed. And then there was a turnover in there as well, but it was a turnover in transition that I think Marcus Smart threw. And rather than being up 16 points or whatever it is, and Ime calling timeout and flipping off his team, instead, the Lakers miss a couple shots, they turn the ball over, the Rockets come back, and they get down by like, you know, two or three possessions instead. And that, to me, I thought was like the most important moment of the game.
Bye, everyone.